and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for May 27th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is my buddy Jim Allen. What's happening, dude?
Buddy. I like the sound of that, my buddy. I'm good, man. How you doing?
Hey, good, good. You are my buddy, man.
How you doing, man?
Hey, I had my ice cream. I had dinner. Watched a baseball game. I'm good.
Cool. I watched a baseball game. Watched a 4.5 hour 5-5 tie today between the Giants and the Buffaloes. But it was an entertaining game.
That was a great game for a 5-5 tie. I mean, all those zeros the Buffaloes put up after scoring that fifth run was kind of frustrating, I think, for them. And but Sakamoto, you know, gets a hanger and knocks it out. And
we had another first time tie experience from Vinny Rotino. They're shaking hands after a tie. What?
Hey, we didn't lose. Yay.
Exactly.
In that case, you know, that bullpen, well, you know, to get off track a little bit, that bullpen, usually I was waiting for it to explode or implode, one or the other or both. And, you know, they were able to keep the game even there. So that was good. That was actually a win for us.
Well, that was certainly the most meaningful inning that Masafumi Hirai has pitched in a long time.
Bye-bye, Hirai. Yeah,
he's back. Bye-bye, Hirai, and he struck out Abe.
Yeah.
He got Sakamoto and Abe.
Yeah, what a good game, and what a good show for you we've got this week. On today's show, we've got an interview with Matt Merton of the Hanshin Tigers, and we're going to discuss Shohei Ohtani's pitching debut. And we're going to talk about Hector Luna and more. So the bases are juiced. Let's get started.
Clearing the bases.
All right, remember, if you live in the United States, you can find out more information on watching live Giants games on One World Sports by visiting their homepage at oneworldsports.com. Okay, so I went out on Monday. I traveled way out to Cebu Dome.
Man, you live in Cebu country. Don't make it sound like you're going to Siberia every time.
You know, sometimes for training runs, I take the train out there and run home. It's that close. I mean, it's not that far. But that's like, you know, that's 20-something kilometers. It's not like, you know, around the corner. But
I hear you. I used to live on the train. Cebu line.
Yeah, and, geez, you're on the train.
It was 40 minutes by bicycle and an hour by train.
All right, well, so I took the train way out to Cebu Dome, and we know Matt. This is his fourth appearance on the show.
Whoa, Matt.
Yeah, congratulations, dude. Yeah.
Most people aren't that willing.
Or fortunate.
Or fortunate.
Now, you know, he's been here for, this is his fourth season, right? And he's got a lot accomplished in these 4 years. He's got the Japan hit record for a season. He hit .349 that year and didn't win the batting title. Do you remember who did?
Norichika Arai.
Norichika Aoki?
Aoki, excuse me.
I know you were on the right track because there's only one Norichika. So you
right. Right. There's only one Norichika. Okay, now who finished second?
I don't know if Matt was second or not. I don't remember.
He was third. Do you believe that? He was third. He finished like 4 points behind Aoki, but his teammate, Keiichi Hirano, was second. That year when he hit .349.
I think he pulled that out of. Yeah, okay.
Wow.
Yeah, well, amazing.
Well, he's not a very big guy. But,
good for
you know,
him. No, he's not. So, yeah, it was Aoki who won the batting title that year, but 214 hits. And then we've had Matt had the two-out, three-out mistake where he threw the ball into the stands.
Sure.
And then last year we had the Nomi incident.
Yep.
And now he's back on pace to hit perhaps 214 hits, maybe more.
Yeah.
He's doing very well. He's, you know, he finished today on Sunday. Do you know what he's hitting now?
I have no idea what he's hitting right now.
Aoki won the batting title in 2010 with a .358 average, and that's exactly what Matt is hitting as of Sunday's games.
Zowies.
Scary. The goosebumps all over.
Well, he's raking pretty good, you know, he's out there getting his hits.
He is. And won a game the other day, walk-off style. So.
He won a couple of games, and he had the winning RBI today, although it was hard to notice because it was like a landslide, you know, he's the guy who cast the first ballot for Ronald Reagan in 1982 or whenever that was. You know, nobody knows, I mean.
Nobody
cast the winning vote.
But yeah. It was, what did they win? 7-1, and they had six consecutive hits in the first inning, and then all the bats basically went to sleep, but they had won the game. So good pitching performance from Fujinami, the rookie Shintaro. So that's good for them. So, yeah, Matt's got a lot of accomplishments, and now he has busted up a catcher, which we talked about in last week's show, and we did talk about in this interview.
Buster.
So let's give it a listen.
All right, our guest this week is Matt Merton of the Hanshin Tigers. Thanks a lot for joining us, buddy.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's good to talk to you. This is your fourth time on the show.
Wow, yeah, I guess I'm a seasoned vet when it comes to speaking, right? I don't know. We'll see.
You're our main man.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'll take a shot at it anyway.
All right, well, it looks like you're hitting again like the record-setting year that you had before. What's changed for you?
You know, I think a lot of it I attribute to kind of getting a little bit of a kick in the butt last year. Last year was very difficult for me. And when I went home, it was just a fresh slate. It was an opportunity for me to kind of evaluate where I was at. I think physically I wanted to get back to a lot of the things that I knew made me successful. I felt like on some level I allowed myself to get caught up in things that I couldn't control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so part of that stemmed into the mental side of the game. And so I just wanted to come back with a new vigor, kind of more of an attitude of determined to show who I was as a player again rather than try to fabricate maybe the success I'd had in the past.
Interesting. And numbers-wise, you guys as a team are hitting off the charts, and in particular, Takahiro Arai has come around again.
Yes, he sure has. I mean, you know, I think that that can be attributed to a number of things, but, I know that this year he feels stronger, his body feels better. I think it helps as well when you're playing on a team that's winning and having success. I always think that when guys are hitting around you, it makes it easier for you. But he's done a really good job, as have a lot of our guys coming back this year after a struggle last year, and I think a lot of us have come back and played more like we're capable of anyway.
Well, speaking of the struggles now, the past couple of years, and particularly last year, it was a real struggle to score runs for this team, but you guys are scoring runs more, both leagues are scoring runs more, so we've been talking about the ball, but can we attribute that to maybe the batters making some adjustments and coming back better prepared?
Yeah, you know what? I think that in any given year, you can see the ebbs and flows of the game. I think that if you look over at a league over the course of, 10 years, you can get a good picture that, there's going to be years with no change. There's going to be years where it might be more pitcher-friendly or hitter-friendly just based on the way the year kind of goes, So I definitely think that in our team, in terms of our team, I think that a lot of guys that come back, I think they're healthy. You see guys physically making some adjustments and stuff. And then I think in part, I think, like I said, playing on a good team helps that. The league as a whole, I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes come the end of the year. There's no doubt that there's been a little bit of a spike in offense. And sometimes it's hard to put your finger on that. It could be attributed to a number of different things. And part of it could be the psyche. Sometimes as a offensive player, if you believe that the ball will do certain things and you believe that you're capable of getting hits and being successful and all the guys around you in the league are doing that, I think psychologically sometimes that can help you. And it can also change the mentality of the pitchers. So, I think it can be attributed to a lot of things, whether it be the mentality of the hitters and pitchers or, whether or not they did anything differently to the ball or, how the plate's being called this year. It could be in any number of things, the way guys made adjustments. So it's hard to pinpoint it, but there's no doubt that there's been an influx in runs scored for sure.
Yeah, I was thinking that maybe some guys added a little bit more muscle. Some guys tried to improve their speed of the bat through the hitting zone or something.
Yeah, I think any year, I think the guys are obviously working on those kind of things. I'll be honest with you, though. I think that you always have to look at the league as a whole. And if you see something that's significantly different over the course of an entire year by an entire league, I think that you quite honestly have to attribute that to something other than just the physical state of the player, because I don't think that on any given year the entire league is all of a sudden going to hit that much better or the entire league's going to pitch that much better. I think that the game's going to be very similar to where it typically is, and if you see a great change one way or the other across the board, I think that obviously you got to start asking questions.
Yeah, okay, well, we're going to wait and put the data together.
Yes.
So now in the preseason, I picked the Tigers to finish, I don't know, fourth or something
right.
like that, just because I was concerned about the catching position. I mean, we didn't know what Fukudome and Nishioka were going to bring to the club, so it's been a non-issue for you guys. So what has been a difference this year? It looks like the team is a lot more happy.
Yeah, we are. I mean, it's a lot easier to come to the ballpark when you're winning, you know, and last year was very difficult for us, not only as individuals, but as a club, you know, and I think this year, you know, coming into spring training, there were some fresh faces, like you mentioned, you know, Nishioka had come back to Japan to play, as well as Fukudome, and to have those guys on our team, I think, was a big plus and a little boost in morale, and they bring a certain personality, a certain professionalism and air about them, I think, as well, and you kind of sense that in camp, and I think that there was a lot of guys in addition to that, like we spoke on, that came back after last year really getting it handed to us, and I think there was a new mentality, a new perspective that, like, you know, more or less we really have to, you know, get the job done or you know, we're going to be in trouble, and so I think you add all that together, and I think that our team had a good chemistry. I think that we really, even in spring training, started playing baseball and playing well, and I think that it kind of carried into the season, and then the start of the year, I think maybe the first 10, 12 games or so, we were doing okay, and I think we played the Giants, and we won a series in Koshien. We were the first team to beat them, and then we kind of got rolling a little bit, and the next thing you know, we got ourselves over 500 and then kind of separated a little bit, so I mean, it's still really early, but I think that we've got some good momentum, and hopefully we can carry that through.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little bit surprising about what you've done with the against the Giants, but I mean, somebody's got to hit them head on, or they're going to run away with the thing.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and I've kind of talked about this maybe before, is that the Giants no doubt have an outstanding team. They're the team to beat. You know, in my opinion, they were the champions last year. On paper, they have an outstanding team. Everybody knows that. They have a great organization. I think the biggest thing when you play those guys is that you have to believe you're capable of beating them. And I think when you go out there and step on the field, you have to know that, yes, you respect who they are as an organization, as a club, but you can't be intimidated by them in any way. And I think that when you believe in your ability to go out and beat a club and you expect to win on any given night, and then you do that, I think it just reinforces that belief. And once you do it a few times, then you believe, hey, you know, we're more than capable, and you almost anticipate and expect to win rather than hope to win.
I see. All right. Yeah, I mean, you guys played them well, shut them out three times.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, that kind of thing, I wouldn't like toot our horn too much. I mean, obviously, we did a great job. You know what I mean? But they're a great organization. We still got to play them a lot. We were fortunate in those games. We know in baseball that on any given night or any given series, those types of things can happen. It doesn't necessarily make us the best team or anything like that. All it does mean is that we have a good enough club that if we play baseball the way we're capable of, we can win some baseball games. And there's probably a couple teams in this league for sure that believe the same thing. So it's a matter of going out and getting the job done.
All right. Yeah. Now, you were involved recently in a home plate collision in which a player got hurt. Now, how are you taught growing up, and what can be done to lower the risk of injury?
It was very unfortunate. You never want to see anybody get hurt. And in fact, that was the first time in my entire career I ever ran into a catcher. It's not a play that I want. In fact, I prefer not to hit a catcher because I feel like, you know, you would hope that you could be able to avoid it. What's happened is I've noticed in this league is that the catchers are obviously taught to stand over the middle of the plate and to put their knee down and to block home plate. And the problem becomes in that when you're trying to score a run, especially a run that's going to, you know, be a big run, and they do that, it makes it difficult to get into the plate. And last year, actually, I believe it was last year, I slid into home, and the guy blocked the plate on me like that, and I jammed my knee in the ground, and my knee hurt for like 2 or 3 weeks after that. And I remember telling myself, I'm like, you know, I need to score a run, and B, I have a chance of injury. By them standing over the middle of the plate, they're asking for contact. Whether it be me sliding into them or running into them, they're actually requiring or forcing you to make contact with them. So it's nothing, obviously, like macho. It's nothing like personal. It's a matter of trying to score a run and in some ways protect yourself. So I think the biggest thing in the home plate collision would be that in order to start to avoid that a little bit more, the catchers need to get off the plate and need to kind of do the sweep tag. You know what I'm saying? And I think that would help. You definitely don't want to see injuries. You don't want to have to see home plate collisions. You would like to see that avoided. And I'm not, and to be honest with you, after that happened, and the kid found out that he ended up getting hurt, like, it makes me hesitant to do it the next time. Because I'm not in the game. Nobody wants to see anybody get hurt on the field. But at the same time, it's just the nature of the game. And if you stand over the middle of the plate and you put your knee down, you have to expect there's going to be contact one way or the other. And so I think the best way to avoid avoid it is for the catchers to do a better job of making sure they're not right in the middle of the plate, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Now, how are you taught growing up?
Now, growing up, up until pro ball, it's not legal. You're not allowed to run the catcher over, okay? Once you get the pro ball, it's part of it. And to be honest with you, when you're in pro ball, in which I haven't had to do a whole lot because when I was playing at home, they didn't block the plate in that nature. But what you're taught to do is if the catcher is on the plate, you're taught to run them over, you know? And I've never been one to do that. That's the first time I've ever done it in my career. Even when they were blocking the plate, like I mentioned last year, I still slid into them and my knee was bothering me for a couple weeks after that. So we're taught if the guy stands over the middle of the plate, the only way what he's doing is he's disallowing you to touch home. So the only way that you can touch home plate is by running into him and knocking him off the plate. So that's what we're taught.
All right, well, don't run over Shino Skayabe, because if it's an all-star catcher, then there's all kinds of talk about what you should do.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, you never want to run, and I know what you're saying, and at the same time, you never want to run a guy over. I think the best way to avoid it is the league looked at getting, they taught their guys to get off the plate like they are, you know. But hopefully we don't see any more of that. I know there's been a couple guys hurt this year, and hopefully there won't be any more.
All right, well, hope you run over the rest of the league.
Thanks,
and you guys
buddy.
Do well for the Kansai area, because I know they're passionate.
Yeah, they need some wins, and especially after last year. So far, so good.
All right, good.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
All right, Matt. Thanks again for the chat, man. It was really good. We really appreciate you sitting down with us.
Yeah, that was a double dose for me because I got I talked to Matt the day before.
Yeah, you know, you did this conspicuous story. Now, we didn't talk.
No. Nope.
I didn't know you were interviewing Matt, and I didn't read your story until after I had done the interview.
You thought, wow, some of the same answers.
And I'm looking at these quotes, and I'm like, man, did we have the exact same question book when we went out to do these
interviews? You know, Jason Koskrie of the Japan Times, who's a wonderful writer.
Fine writer.
I say that because he's listening. I'd say that anyway, Jason. Anyway, he's a wonderful writer.
You can't see his face right now, Jason, but yeah, you believe it if you want. I kid because I kid.
Okay, now, he did a story on Matt that was published on the 11th of May, and it was not that dissimilar. I mean, these are the hot topics. He was in the doghouse. He was in the doghouse of the bottom dog in the pecking order. Last year he was really on the out and outs, and now he's back on top, and he's the king of the hill, and the Tigers are playing really well. So the content has not been all that difference between what Jason wrote and I wrote and his interview with you.
So obviously, great minds. What can I say?
I wouldn't know because I don't like anybody else, so you leave me out of the great minds discussion.
All right. Fantastic minds. How's that?
All right. I'll go for the better than average.
There you go. What else? Well, I guess what in particular that you didn't ask, and that was, did not appear in your story or Jason's story, made an impression on you?
Well, I think it has to go with the question I didn't get around to asking, which was about the catcher. And we've talked about this incessantly because it's a topic near and dear to my heart. We've already talked about it a lot this year, and we talked about it last week. So just to give it a very brief thing, I absolutely agree with Matt, you know, and I'm sure everybody would understand that who listens, in that, you know, you just can't treat for some reason, baseball treats the catcher like, he's a space alien who can be eradicated if the runner feels it's worth his effort.
Right.
You know, it's like, that video game back in the 60s.
A video game in the
60s? 70s. Space Invaders.
Space Invaders.
You can whack them if you like.
Right.
Or something.
60s.
Anyway.
Yeah. What 60s were you in?
Okay. No, what I mean is that the idea that home base is another base. Now, in baseball, it's different. We've talked about this before, that if you did what runners do at home plate, which is I had to hit him, otherwise I would have been out. How does that fly if you smash into the second baseman and give him a blow to the jaw? Well, I had to slug him or I would have been out.
Right.
You know, it doesn't make any sense. But catchers, we allow that. And why we allow it is a long and complicated story. Matt's point is if they don't block the plate, we're not going to slide into them. Okay. Well, I've seen people not blocking the plate and still getting slid into, which is a problem. And there's no rule to prevent that, which is the issue. But I perfectly agree with him. You know, the catcher should stand, you know, give the runner access to the bag the same way a third baseman and a shortstop, a second baseman does. And then put the tag on him, call him out.
Right.
Why the logic of, if I don't run over him, I'll be out.
Well, yeah, yeah. Nobody wants to be out. And what he said, remember what he said, these players are trying to score what could be a pivotal run in some of these games. So, I mean, it's important to score.
Yeah, but when it's the second out and you're going to be out, you know, you're the winning run and you're going to be out at second base caught stealing, you don't come in standing up and knock the second baseman over to get to second base.
Right. I understand
because, because you're out. Because the basically the logic is if he has the ball, if you are out if you cannot avoid the tag. That's the rule at every other base but home plate.
Right.
At home plate, we've got this whole set of unwritten rules.
Okay.
The catcher in Japan doesn't even have to tag the guy. He has to roll into a ball like a pill bug. And I've seen so many runners tagged out at the plate or called out on the plate on a home plate collision in which the catcher never tries to tag him.
Right. He just protects himself, yeah.
And the ball doesn't come loose, you're out.
Well, it was funny, and I know you said you weren't going to talk about this very much, and then...
Okay, I'm
trying to stop you here. But it was so funny because we did the interview and I turned off the tape and he said, "Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm trying to explain?" And then he did this whole demonstration and all the other reporters in the dugout, they all kind of crowd around and he's getting props, you know, putting down a box, a little box of something and say, "Okay, if this is home plate," and he's explaining and I'm like looking around, I'm like, all these people are looking at you, and I know what you're talking about, dude. You know, I'm there with you. You're preaching to the choir. So after he finished explaining and doing his demonstrations, which went on for about 5 minutes, which was fun because I did learn what he's saying about how the catchers in the States set up and they give you a corner or they give you a piece or normally they don't straddle the plate.
Right.
Whereas catchers in Japan tend to straddle the plate.
Yep.
And then drop a knee down. Some of the reporters came up to me afterwards and they were asking, you know, he seemed fiery about what was going on there. And I'm like, well, yeah, I think he wants to convey the fact that he didn't mean to hurt this player. Mm. And that it was all just an unfortunate accident. But, I mean, it was fun. It was fun talking to people about that. So.
Okay, yeah, I'll bet. You always love that when there's that little tension on the sidelines before the game of who's talking to who and what are they talking about. And if I have a listen, am I going to be able to follow it or should I follow it?
Right, right.
So there's always that going on. So we have different people talking to different players and sort of different sidelines. So, but if something really animated and fun is going on, everybody wants to know what's going on.
Yep, yep. Now, for me, I mean, you know, you talked about the butt kicking part, which is something I think I remember seeing in your story. But, you know, I was thinking, you know, it was more like he said a kick in the butt, and I'm thinking it was a butt kicking that he received, and he and the whole team. It wasn't just him because they didn't do well all last year. And again, we knew they could pitch. But you go out there and you pitch well and you still lose a bunch of games, it really, really hurts because you're in every game every night. If you're a team that gives up a lot of runs and the game is pretty much over by the third or fourth inning and you're just playing out the rest of the innings so you can go home, then we understand. But they were in a lot of games last year that they ended up losing. So not him per se, but the team suffered a lot. And I think he suffered because of that.
Part of the word I overuse too much is a dynamic, but part of the context was that batting averages last year were really down.
Yeah, you know, we only had like one or two 300 hitters for the first 2-3 months of the season.
Right. And now what happens is when you looked at the Tigers, basically what most fans still do and what most managers still do and most editors and writers therefore still do is they look at where the batting averages are. And essentially a writer from the Daily Sports told me that Kanemoto wasn't hitting, Toritani was hitting. And Toritani's a great example of why batting average doesn't work. First of all, he usually hits for average, but he leads the Central League in walks every year.
Right.
So this guy's on base all the time, so it's a different issue. But if you looked at batting average, you would think the Tigers weren't doing anything. Okay, mm-hmm. Now here's the thing. Now Merton's batting average was bad, but Kanemoto's was worse and Brazil's was worse and
Arai, Takahiro, older brother was worse.
right. And the younger brother wasn't even playing then hardly. He was still just a bench guy. So basically they didn't want to say Kanemoto's struggling, even though all the writers thought he was because his average was like 220. But the thing about Kanemoto is he was still hitting doubles and homers, and he was drawing lots of walks. So he was hitting 220, but he had a real nice, you know, he had a 340 or 350 on base percentage. He was slugging close to 500. So he was really still a productive player.
Right.
Merton really wasn't.
Yeah.
And anyway, so the story was that the coaches turned on Merton as an example of why the Tigers were struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this happen a lot of times. Usually the head coach's job is to light a fire under a player's feet or whatever part of the anatomy you want to use. And by essentially bad-mouthing him in the press and letting the press get on him. In this case, it might have been a case of, well, he's a foreigner. I'll feed this guy to the press. And he's a foreigner, so he won't know what's being said. Well, the press hounded him mercilessly. We talked about this last year, so no need to go into it. But the whole point was the Tigers as a team weren't hitting, and they needed a scapegoat. And Merton was their guy. And things just spiraled out of control.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the Nomi situation didn't help at all. But, you know, I like what he's doing at the plate. You know, he and Hector Luna are going to be locked, I hope, in what becomes a very interesting race for the batting title. I mean, obviously, I don't expect Hector Luna to bat 400 much longer, but, you know, Matt, like we said, 358. In third place at the moment is Tony Blanco. I don't expect that to hold up too much longer, but he's at 356, so who knows? And then the first Japanese player high on the list is Norihiro Nakamura of Yokohama. So we've got a great mix, I think, of guys who can battle for this, for the Central League batting title. It's going to be interesting. I'm going to really enjoy watching it. Hopefully, you know, those four at least stay in it. And then guys like Nishioka, stick around. Maybe Sakamoto moves up a little bit higher. We'll have to see. I think some of the guys are going to come back down. But, you know, this was the first time I had gotten out to see Hanshin this year. And I had, mm-hmm. you know, I've been seeing the record. I've been watching him on TV. But, you know, when we go to the park and we watch these guys show up for work, essentially at their office, whether it's their office on the road or their office at home, they essentially start going through their routines. You know, they're getting ready for the games. They're stretching. They're taking batting practice. They're taking some infield, some ground balls, shagging fly balls, and what have you. And the thing that I've always noticed about the Hanshin Tigers since I've been working at this job since 2005 is the serious tone that the team has always had, you know, in their approach, you know, coming out to the field, especially with Tomoaki Kanemoto because of his very serious nature. It seemed like there was always a dark cloud around him, and he was also serious, and it was a life or death situation if he didn't have a good batting practice or something. I don't know. I don't know what he was thinking because, you know, we never got a chance to talk to him before games. He didn't talk to anybody. And I noticed that when I went out to the park that the Tigers were smiling and having fun, and it just seemed a much different atmosphere, much different tone than I've seen with that team ever, to be honest, for me personally. I don't know if you've been able to see Hanshin.
I've seen different, you know, obviously I've seen different, the Tigers under, four different managers, five since I started this job. So, are they more serious? Are they less serious?
I don't mean to convey that they're not
enjoyable.
Serious. But they're very serious, but there just
relaxed?
there just seems to be, there was always a dark cloud. There was something behind the smile.
Well,
and it seemed like this year, everybody, the smiles were genuine and they're really having fun. And it's just like what Matt said at the end of his, that hero interview that he had on Saturday night. He said, we're really having fun. We're enjoying it. And just like he said, it's fun to come to the ballpark all the time when you know you have a chance to win.
Well, I guess Exhibit A is their new home run routine.
Yeah, but, you know, and I'll talk about that on a future show, but every team has gotten an annoying something now, and it's really, really getting on my nerves. But anyway, we'll talk.
Then that's a good thing. So, but anyway, it looks fun, and it looks like they're having fun, and part of the Tigers used to be, don't look like you're having fun.
I can believe that.
And I think that was a team cultural issue that really carried over last year. I don't think it had anything to do with Kanemoto or any of the other guys.
Certainly
but
not
was,
one player. No, I don't think it was one player, but he in particular was very, difficult to, as you know, approach.
Right. Well, yes and no. I mean, I know people who had good luck with him. speaking with him. But
I'm not saying that he was difficult to talk to. I was difficult to approach. It was just
trying to
get him to stop. And
I wonder if Nishioka is not my favorite player, but he certainly he has a knack for irreverence.
Mm-hmm.
That might have helped a little bit. And hearing Matt refer to him as a professional is, well, I guess he gets paid to do what he's doing, so he's a professional. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, we're all aware of your thinly veiled affinity for Mr. Nishioka.
as a player, he's a tremendous player. He's motivated. But anyway, we'll go on. I'll move on.
The other thing that he said was about, I asked him, because we've been talking about the ball so much, I said, maybe the players have prepared, and he said, well, maybe part of it is belief. And I wanted to shoot that down at the time, because I don't think, what's happening now with guys like Wataru Hiane of Yakult and Kenta Imamiya of SoftBank and Naoki Nakahigashi of Hiroshima, little tiny, little pipsqueak guys like this, hitting their first home runs in years. I don't think that's belief, because those guys are not home run hitters. They don't take home run swings. They're making good contact, obviously, and driving the ball, but I'm not sure I'm going to go for that story. I think you couldn't see his face, obviously. He's smiling as he said that, and I think he said, well, let's not spoil it. Let's wait until the year is over until we packed up a bunch of numbers and then compare them to past years is basically what he said.
I'm all for that, because it's a very – regardless of how simple it looks, mm-hmm. we can never really know. I mean, we can never know all the things that are involved. There are undoubtedly things, even if they change the ball. Now, and as you said, you'll say sometimes when they don't change the ball, there are fluctuations. Players enter the league, players leave the league, players get hurt, stadiums change.
Nobody stays the same.
The weather changes. The weather is probably the biggest factor. 2010 was a monster home run year. Was one of the biggest home run years ever in Japanese baseball, and it was basically the hottest year in decades.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, Tigers are doing well. Even the crying Yamato Maeda, who you see that the other day. You got an infield hit to keep this rally going, and he ends up crying after this walk off win. And he didn't get the walk off hit.
Well, maybe he was mistaken and he thought people were going to come up and punch him and stuff because he got it. And he was crying in advance.
Maybe they should have.
Yeah, that actually, I wouldn't like to see that because I'm not a proponent of violence, but somebody's got to just tell these people to man up a little.
You're telling me. But I like what the Tigers are doing. Takahiro Arai, we talked about the fact that he's hitting. His brother, Ryota Arai, is hitting. Toritani is doing what he does every year. He's very much a model of consistency. And I think, the biggest difference between the Tigers last year and the Tigers this year is that they're scoring more runs. They did the same kind of mound work that we can expect. Even with stretches without Fujikawa last season, they were still fine in the bullpen.
Well, Fujikawa hasn't been Fujikawa for a couple of years, so that's really not a big deal.
He wasn't even on the roster at some points last year. So, I mean, they're doing well. I think they're going to stick around. I think they're for real. So we have to see. Even without Fukudome, they've been doing all right. So
they've got a lot of team speed. They basically got everything you need. I mean, you questioned Fuji has never been a really good catcher, and he was brought on. They signed a free agent catcher who was going to be the answer to their problems, but has anybody seen
Mr. Hidaka?
Takeshi Hidaka. I think he's in the farm team or something.
He's singing somewhere with Neil. Sadaka.
Wow.
Oh, sorry, folks, and I'm dating myself again. Let's move on to the biggest game that occurred in years in Japan, and that was the starting pitching debut for Shohei Ohtani of the Fighters at Sapporo Dome the other night. And wow, I really enjoyed this game. I watched it. I watched him pitch. I watched the first five innings twice.
Wow. I watched the first five innings twice today, too. Wait, it was a 12-inning game. Okay.
Oh.
So anyway, yeah, I wish I could have seen that game. We didn't have it on the cable at our cable at the office, so I couldn't see it. But Yeah, it was. I was pretty amazed by some of the numbers he was putting up.
Well, I thought, here's the thing, my impression, he pitched 5 innings, gave up 6 hits, he only struck out 2, he walked 3, he threw 86 pitches, most of which were fastballs. I think I have them written down here, because in the newspaper the next day they had, I think it was Nikon Sports, had every batter he faced and the location and the pitch that he threw. So he threw 65 fastballs, 43 of which were at least 150 kilometers. He threw 19 sliders and 2 curves. He topped out at 158 kilometers, which is about 98 on the gun back home. He was consistently around 142 kilometers per hour. But in the fourth, he kind of dipped down. He started to slow down a little bit in the fourth inning, and then he dialed it up later in that inning, and then Vladimir Coco Ballantyne lined out into a double play on the last pitch that he threw. And the only thing I could assess is that he needs to work better or learn to work a little bit better from the stretch, because when he got runners on, he just seemed to be out of sorts, and that's when he lost his control and he struggled. But other than that,
I would say that his approach or his composure or something, some issue there, because he got behind 14 of the 18 batters he faced, which is not a real recipe for success.
And yet, only 6 hits, yeah. Well, it was a coincidental, I'm sure, but it was interesting that it ended up being a 3-3 tie, because, you know, he's a hitter and a batter, and I think he's equally good at both.
Well, right now, he's more useful as a batter, but that's because he hasn't pitched.
You think so? I was going to say, because I think they need to stretch him. I mean, I'm looking at him, and I forgot, Iwamoto was the color analyst, and I can't remember his first name, but he's a former fighter.
Stomu.
Yeah, and he was just lauding him, praising him up and down the broadcast. I mean, he kept saying, well, this guy is good. This guy is good. This guy is great. You know, he just said he loved his form. Just like you said, he loved his composure. He didn't seem to be rattled at all out there. It just seemed like he got tired because he hasn't been stretched out enough, because he hasn't been pitching. And so, yeah, like I said, the 3-3 tie probably symbolizes the fact that he's equal at this moment in time. He's as useful a pitcher as he is a batter. I think his future is pitching, though. And I think
we're talking about two different things. I'm saying, if you had a game tomorrow.
Oh, I know we're talking about two different things.
Right. If you had a game tomorrow.
Want him to hit.
I would want him to hit because he can hit.
Because he's
There's no doubt about that. You get a 19-year-old who can hit the way he can. So he's batting 326, and let's say he's consistently at that level. We don't know, we don't know what his true level as a hitter is. It's probably lower, but he's 19 years old. Okay, and I'll just say this, that the 19-year-old, or is he 18?
Yeah, he turns 19 on July 5th.
Okay, then he's 18. Teenagers who can hit like him are, the majority of them, Hall of Famers, and not because they can pitch. They're vastly more rare than 18-year-olds who can throw 154 kilometers per hour.
Yeah.
So now, whether his who knows what his future is going to be, but right now it's bright on both ends. But on one side, can he be stretched out and be a better pitcher? Absolutely. Can he be stretched out and be a better hitter? Absolutely. It's hard to say where his upside is, but I'll tell you, if he continues to hit the way he is, it will be very hard for him to be as valuable as a pitcher as he is as a hitter.
Yeah. Well, I liked it. I think I might even watch the game again, or hopefully they'll get him out there on the mound real quick.
Yeah, he's supposed to pitch in a couple of days, so.
I really want them to do is start him as the starting pitcher and then DH somebody else. I want him to bat sixth in the game because, they're losing. What's to lose now? They're struggling. So why not? What do you got to lose?
Why not, indeed? Yeah. Let's see. Well, if he pitches on Wednesday, which is possible, the Fighters would be playing in Hiroshima.
Perfect.
But being that Kuriyama's plan was when he pitches, I just wanted to focus on pitching, which he might to hold him off until Friday's game, in which he'll be would be pitching once again at home at Sapporo Dome and not batting.
Yeah.
You don't want a 5-inning pitcher in the batting order.
No.
So.
All right, let's go on to Hector Luna now. Here's a guy who I did a story on earlier this year because he started the season with a 17-game hitting. Then he didn't hit for a few games, and then he hit in the next 23 games. He's getting big props from the old farts on TV who keep saying, you know, they don't see a place to pitch him consistently and get him out. And they talked about him being a 400 hitter. Now, I really don't think that's realistic. I just don't think.
This doesn't happen in this age, I'm afraid.
Yeah, but I did look up some of his numbers in the States and, you know, compared them to what's going on here in Japan. And his batting average on balls in play in the States in seven seasons in the big leagues, which is hard to compare, but this just gives you an idea of what a kind of hitter he was when he came over. His batting average on balls in play was .308.
Which is very good.
Which is pretty good. And his on-base percentage was about 50 points higher than that on average for each season. And in Japan, his batting average on balls in play is .469.
Wow.
And his on-base percentage is .462.
Okay.
So,
well, there's the expression we're looking for is regression to the norm. So he's probably well above what could be expected from his quality. In other words, he's doing well, and things are going really, really well for him. You know, a lot of chance things are going his way, and then over time, a lot of those will wash out. And I'm saying that, you know, it's not, statistically speaking, it's not a big surprise to see a guy in 150 at bats hit 400, and the same hitter of the same quality hit 150.
Yeah, I don't expect this to hang on. I don't expect a 400 hitter. I just don't see it happening. But like I said, I'm looking forward to the batting title race and seeing if he can hang on and win that. That's going to be fun to watch. And of course, these teams play each other, Hanshin. And if Merton's going well, and if Luna's going well, we might have a Dr. Gale Hopkins situation where they're walking guys intentionally to just avoid the situation, you know, altogether.
Right. Well, and the other thing is Hector Luna's major league career is 533 at bats, so it's not really a very useful.
Not a lot of sample size there. Now, yeah, his 23 game hitting streak put him second in club history for the longest one. I think the longest one was 25 in club history.
Okay, in AAA, which is in AAA, the other side, he was a career .286 hitter in 2,366 at-bats. So to think that he's going to hit 400 in Japan at the age of
33, I think he is.
33 is bizarre.
Highly, very unlikely.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. I don't see that happening. But on the other hand, it's like the Ohtani, should he hit or should he pitch thing. You know, I don't see, you know, we can all see the problems of, you know, he shouldn't do this and he shouldn't do that, but how wonderful if he can. So, you know,
yeah.
Good luck, Hector Luna.
Yeah,
you know, go for it, man.
The only problem is I don't think Morimichi Takagi, the skipper, knows or has any idea what to do with him. I think they wanted to hit him third. They wanted to hit him fourth.
You know, let him hit. Don't worry about where he's batting. Just let him hit.
But I think that they don't want to put him in the leadoff spot, even though he's got that gaudy on-base percentage, because people aren't going to be driving him in as much. You know, he's the guy who, when people get on, they want to get runners on in front of him. But we'll see.
There's nothing wrong with that.
We'll see how it goes. Good luck to Hector. Now, I wanted to talk about some notes that occurred this past week. One was the Giants won a walk-off game on Saturday, and that was their 5,500th victory. The most all-time in NPB. How nice for them.
Yeah, well, we're all Giants fans.
Hey, man, you know, they're the Giants for a reason. We love to hate them.
congratulations to them. What Matt said to me, what he said to you, what he probably said to Jason, Giants are a great organization, no question about it, and they're a greater organization now than they have been in decades. So, you know, those wins, you know, some are by hook and by crook, and some are by...
You mean most are by crook, and some are by Hook.
No. They get their, they get their vig going, but the Giants are a quality organization. They put a good product. They are compelled to win, and they do that with amazing and irritating frequency.
There you go. Well put. Well put. Now, another record that, occurred this week was I always mess up this guy's name.
You always mess it up, John.
Yo Hijirisawa, who set the Pacific League record with his 659th consecutive chance without committing an error as an outfielder. And his streak began on September 22nd, 2010 in a game against the Nippon Ham Fighters. And he broke the record of Tatsuya Ozeki of the Lions, who had the old record. And the MPB record is...
What was the NPB record, or it's the Central League record? Because, you know, the reason I don't know this is because the Kyoto copy on this was only had the Central League record. So whether there was a Japan or a single league record that was longer, I don't know.
Okay, well, it's 817 by Eiji Fuji when he played with the Hanshin Tigers.
Right, and here's the thing with that is the record might actually be longer. If it's the NPB record, might actually be longer because without making an error, he moved to the Pacific League the following year.
Uh-huh.
So his record with Hanshin was cut short by his moving to another team.
Right. Well, something for that crack staff to look up this week.
What is it with you and the crack? Stay away from the crack, John. Don't slip in.
All right. One other instance was the ejection of Nippon Ham skipper Hideki Kuriyama the other night. Yep. And that was just kind of bizarre.
That was weird.
And you were watching when he got thrown. I was flipping channels as usual.
No,
I got there. Oh, you didn't?
I did a YouTube.
Okay.
I watched the baseball on YouTube.
By the time I got there, I heard the announcer saying, "Huh? Huh? Is he ejected? I wonder if he's ejected." And I was intrigued, and I couldn't flip the channels anymore. So, you saw it on YouTube. What happened?
Okay. Basically, this is the ninth inning of Saturday night's game. And the ninth inning, and the Tigers are losing. And Ryo Asai comes on as a pinch hitter to lead off the inning against Fighters closer Hisashi Takeda. And on one pitch or another in the sequence, Asai pulls his bat back from an inside pitch, and it comes bouncing off the knob of the bat.
Clearly.
And Asai steps out of the batter's box, and so he can regroup and get back in for the next pitch, having fouled one off, when the umpire comes over and says to him, "No, son, you're on first base because that ball hit you." And he looks like...
It did?
Are you on drugs?
Are you sure? where did it hit me? Can you show me?
No. And he's going, "Okay, I'll do that." And the Tigers fans all applaud, and Kuriyama says, "Wait a second, he doesn't even know he's getting hit. What are you giving him first base for? Give me a break." Anyway, so Kuriyama comes out in a state of disbelief, completely unlike Mr. Kiyoshi Nakahata, manager of the Bay Stars, who would have looked like he was on crack.
Like either he's on crack or on fire, or on both.
And Kuriyama strolls out, and he gives the guy his best, "I was a broadcast analyst for many years, son, and I know a foul." And he's basically explaining to him his job in a very statesmanlike way. And then after a few minutes, Kuriyama strolls off the field, into the dugout, through the dugout, and into the clubhouse.
Yeah, he just disappears.
And the umpire goes over to follow the Fighters' bench to explain to him that he has just been kicked out of the game because nobody had a clue. You know, he must have said something about the guy's mother or his sister or his something.
Very politely, in fact.
And very politely, with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
He's kicked out of the game. I didn't see today whether he got fined for using... He was ejected technically for using abusive language.
My favorite.
Yep, the bogen. So it was a bogen taijo.
Yeah, I got there late, and the announcers didn't know what was going on. I got there late, meeting on TV. The announcers didn't know what was going on, and like you say, the team didn't know what was going on. nobody knew what was going on at that point. You know, the guy doesn't know he gets hit by a pitch. The umpire doesn't know he doesn't get hit by a pitch.
You know who didn't know what was going on was the Tigers, because they took the wood to Hisashi Takeda, and they didn't stop until Matt Merton had driven in the winning run. So they came from a run down with the help of a foul ball, and I think Takeda was in shock, and he just never got over it.
Yeah, it was pretty weird, pretty weird. So we'll see. I didn't see if he got fined either. I was too busy, but I think that'll come out on Monday. Really interesting stuff there, and what's going on with the Fighters, and I mean the two dynamics that's going on with those two teams. I mean, everything that could go right for the Tigers pretty much is, and everything that could go wrong for the Fighters pretty much is. So it's kind of interesting. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, this week we have a question from Mark in Livermore, California. Isn't that up by you somewhere?
It is.
I think I've driven through there once before.
Yeah, Livermore Lab is a nuclear research facility connected with University of California. It's in the East Bay.
Okay. Well, I can't remember. But Mark's question is, first he says, hi, guys, love the podcast. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
I was wondering, is there a trade deadline in Japan as there is in the U.S.? I'm a fan of the Hanshin Tigers and was wondering if you thought they might pick up some help. Brooks Conrad is really struggling and they could use some more offense. Thanks.
Brooks Conrad is really struggling. He's the nicest guy in the world, and you really want him to succeed, but he is really struggling.
Yeah, but I saw an article the other day, and they really, there's something about him that they like, and I didn't read all of the article, but it doesn't seem like they're willing to get rid of him at the moment. Mm. And like I've always said, even when you're struggling, if you're a winning team and things are going well, you can afford to keep a guy around who's, if he's working hard, mm-hmm. and he looks like he's going to make the adjustments and he's going to get better. You can afford the time to wait and see. Whereas if you're losing all the time, you just get fingers pointed at you,
right?
And you end up getting on a plane. So about the deadline.
Okay, there is a trade deadline or a deadline to add players to your roster. Now it's not hard and fast. It's basically a non-waiver deadline. Now, you probably didn't know they had waivers in Japan, but they are used now and then. And players who are released can be acquired on waivers after the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
The deadline is now July 31st. It has been July 31st since 2008 when they expanded the rosters during the Beijing Olympics because players were going to be away from their teams to play for the country. And they also, in order to facilitate that, they extended the roster, the non-waiver roster changes deadline from June 30th to July 31st. They pushed it back a month.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it was originally for that purpose, but as they do in Japan, they just changed it, and then I guess they forgot to change it back, or they liked it better that way. Sometimes it's like they don't really have a plan. They just do something, and they say, oh, okay, this works.
I tell you what happened is whoever made that decision, come the next April, he was transferred to a different section.
Could be.
And the new guy just hasn't changed yet because he doesn't know.
Yeah, because he thought this is the way it always was.
Right. Because that happens in Japan. You just get transferred in April for no reason. Well, you know, one of the things that I really like about Japanese baseball is we don't have players being flipped around like Strat-O-Matic baseball cards all the time. You don't have to worry about a guy, even in the offseason, being traded so much. There aren't as many transactions. I think in part, and this is my personal opinion, in part because there's so few teams that if you make trades, these guys, you know, perhaps if they develop or turn into the player you thought they would be before you decided you needed to trade them, that it will come back to burn you, if not in your league race, then in the playoffs, in the Japan series. So that's my personal opinion, but I just, you know, Japanese companies tend to be very loyal in society. And I think that it's reflected in these Japanese, in the way they treat the players in terms of not trading so much. But I mean, I don't know. I just know that there aren't so many transactions. It's just,
well, there's a thing about essentially the team's as whatever you think about how they market or how well they market, I would guess how well they market their assets, tend to, essentially they're trying to sell the fact that they have gutsy players.
Mm-hmm.
Their players are gutsy and loyal. Now that's part of almost every team's, you know, our players are gutsy and loyal and hardworking. So you run across the problem when you trade somebody of why did we get rid of this guy when he was so gutsy and loyal and hardworking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they build these players up as, you know, and they build up the little fan interest and the fans latch on to it, especially guys who come up through the minors and they build up a fan base. And then when they trade them, you're alienating your fans because the guy you're adding to the team has no fans within your organization.
Not yet. Got
no,
to build them up. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's every trade is essentially seen as a loss.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one thing. And the other thing is you'll notice in Japan that the teams have sort of trade, there are trade networks. There are executives and teams which work together. The fighters have, the Tigers have a channel with the fighters. Lots of fighters, Tigers trades. Fighter, Tigers and Marines, a lot of trades. Tigers and Oryx, lots of trades. Tigers and Lions, lots of trades.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see Tigers, Dragons trades that often. You don't see Tigers, Carp trades that often. Carp.
And Giants, yeah. Yeah,
Carp, Buffaloes, Giants, lots of trades, and so on. So you see these different channels. The Dragons are kind of funny. When Marty Brown was the manager of the Eagles, he was dying to get Yota Arai, who was at that time trapped in the Dragons minor league team. He was trying to get him to play third base, mm-hmm. but the Dragons would not trade him to the Eagles.
Interesting.
So,
well, I was having a Google chat with Michael Westbay, who does the Pro Yaku Report mm-hmm. video podcast, and I was mentioning to him that, you know, the Bay Stars are going to need to bring in some foreign hurler help in that bullpen, because perhaps if they see in the second half of the season they can get close to 500 or they can stay out of last place, which they said was one of their goals, they're going to need to bring in somebody to help in that bullpen. I mean, Sosa is 36. We can't expect him to go out there and pitch every day and be healthy at the end of the season when you really need him. And so I said, I think each team saves some money. They have some emergency funds for
sure.
players if they need to bring them in, and they need to bring in some foreign help. And he said essentially, he didn't use these words, but he said that was a very Yomiurian way of thinking.
Well,
just to go out and buy some help. And I'm like, well, I don't know if that's the case. He suggested that the Bay Stars promote from within. And I'm like, it's not like the guys on the farm on that team are going to be better, or they can have expectations that they'll be even the same as what they have now. And what they have now isn't getting it done considerably in some certain situations. So I would contend that you use that emergency fund, you bring in some imported talent, and you get close to the playoffs, or you get at least out of last place, and keep some guys healthy, and work with those young guys, bring them up as well, but put them in certain situations where, you know, they can't hurt you.
Well, here's the other thing, is that there's always still the option. Well, the Bay Stars actually have been one of the more active teams in trying to find pitching help in June and July. You know, they've always seems to be finding somebody. Usually they're not that successful for a variety of reasons.
Right.
I think you can trade with other teams. There are trades. You know, you look for a guy who's perhaps unwanted. You know, a guy who's run out of his luck in terms of dealing with his front office, but who can actually pitch. These guys are available. Hideki Okajima was very successful with the Fighters after he couldn't pitch for the Giants' first team.
Yep.
They had to trade two guys to get him, and he only pitched for him for one season, but he was dynamite.
Yeah. All right. So, very stimulating conversation generated from an excellent question. Thank you very much, Mark.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate that. More questions are always welcome. In fact, we beg you guys. Okay.
Didn't you say that last week and then you weren't going to beg? Didn't we go over this?
Okay.
Why do I even meet with you?
we are not the Temptations. We are too proud to beg.
Oh, man. You're killing me.
Oh, is that too tempting?
You're killing me. Okay, so what, as Jim is trying to state eloquently,
which you will,
is that you can send your comments and questions to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we will talk about them on the show.
And if you send MP3 or some other form of audio file that we can put on the air, we'll get to listen to you, and you can share your opinions with the world.
That's right. All right. Thank you very much. Good job, man.
Hey, good job, dude. And another week of baseball ahead of us.
More Interleague. I love it. Love it. Love it.
Oh, all right. Better than this.
All right. Enjoy your week and enjoy your baseball.
Okay. Enjoy, fellas. Talk to you next week.